You know, I've just come back from ABC, and in fact, I was asked to get back a little bit early because we needed a babysitter. Diane was working yesterday, and Palace is working full-time. Everybody was working, so could I help with the kids? And I haven't seen the grandchildren much the last few weeks, so I thought it'd be nice just to spend some time yesterday with them. Turned out to be 10 hours and 15 minutes. And 47 seconds. And there were times I thought, oh, if only I'd stayed at ABC for that extra day. But I did learn one thing, though, and this is good news for any of you guys who might be looking for a wife. I can't think of anybody here who might be. But, you know, when I took them to... Although I got to admit, actually, all these women were over 50. But, you know, I mean, everybody stopped and talked and... You know, one lady stopped and asked the girl, she said, oh, Myers, it was just me and the two girls. I mean, every woman with pushing a cart stopped to talk. I wish I'd known this at 18. I'd have taken my younger brothers out more. You must really love your grandpa to come out like this for with him. And they said, yes, we really love our grandpa. But, you know, at the time they said that, we were actually on the way to where they saw the donuts. So that's probably a bit of an incentive for them as well. But anyway, so I did learn that at Myers yesterday, that there were some challenges with them. But anyway, it's a good introduction, though, about young people, because what I want to talk about today is what should we be teaching our children and our grandchildren and, you know, the children that we might have any influence over in any way. The reason I ask this is because at ABC I give a test when I finish teaching Daniel and Revelation. I could tell you what Josh's score was, but maybe I won't. But anyway, at ABC we have a test at the end of Daniel and Revelation, and I always find it interesting as to what they get right and what they get wrong. I think just about everybody got wrong the question about, you know, the question was when did Daniel live, or when was the book of Daniel written? Which century was it written in? And just about everybody got that wrong. And another question they got wrong was the question about the 70 weeks prophecy. What date does it date from? So obviously ancient history is not a strong point. Didn't expect it to be either. But it's interesting, I think, just about everybody got the question right about which church, which of the seven churches in Revelation 2 and 3 is the lukewarm church. And I think all but one got Laodicea. And I also had a question about tribulation, and just about everybody got that right too. And it made me think that, you know, there's certain things which I think often parents emphasize, which children then pick up, they remember. And there are other things that perhaps we neglect. I mean, I can say, after almost 20 years in the United States, I can say quite definitely that, you know, many of our children who have grown up in the church did not understand a lot about morality, about, you know, relationships with the opposite sex and what they should not get into before they get married. You know, because that was an area that a lot of parents were uncomfortable talking to their children about. But, you know, they knew Laodicea, they know about tribulation, and, you know, some children have even had nightmares because of things that have been taught to them by their parents or their grandparents. And, you know, it shows that I think sometimes our emphasis is not in the right areas. And there's some areas that we need to emphasize more. So, you know, let's have a look at some of these things. You know, what are we teaching our children? Where should our emphasis be? What priorities should we have? What lessons can be learned from the past? First of all, an important principle, I think, is this, and we have to remember this when we are bringing up our children. It's an extremely important principle. Philippians 2 and verse 12. I thought about it again this morning. I've thought about it quite a bit because, as you know, our eldest daughter and her husband are in the church and they're teaching their children many of the things that we believe. But our son and his wife are not. And, you know, therefore I see a difference already. This morning, the other two, Kurtz too, were talking about Santa at one point. And, you know, that's going to present a challenge for us. But also this morning, the two girls walked in on me while I was praying. And, you know, I was down on my knees, and they walked in, and they said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm praying." And then the youngest, who's three, said, "What's praying?" I said, "Well, I'm talking to God. I have to speak to the church this afternoon, and I'm asking God to help me." And the questioner, they looked bewildered and said, "What's God?" Not who's God, but what's God? So I explained, well, God made everything. Without God, there'd be no grandpa, no Paris, no Brooklyn. And they thought for about 5 seconds, and then they said, "Oh, have you got anything for us to eat?" So they changed the subject very quickly. But you know, at least it's put a thought in their minds a little bit. And, you know, you have to take the opportunities when they present themselves. Because I think it's very important that each of our children develops their own relationship with God, their personal relationship with God. It's not so important that they be a part of the United Church of God, but that they must be aware of God's existence and that they can turn to God in times of trouble, in times of stress, even when they have serious problems with their parents, which, you know, may not be our faults as parents. You know, none of us is perfect as a parent. None of us has been. And, you know, our children need to know that there's somebody they can turn to no matter what the problem that they have. And so I think it's very important for us to help them to develop their own relationship with God. As the Apostle Paul says in chapter 2 of verse 12 of Philippians, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Ultimately, our children, like us, are on their own, ultimately. I mean, we are responsible for them when they're young. But remember, when the Israelites rebelled against God in the wilderness, God said they'd be walking around in the wilderness for 40 years. He said, until everybody over the age of 20 has died off, only those under 20 will be allowed to go into the promised land, which means he did not hold those accountable who were under the age of 20. Whenever I think about this, I always think, well, what about somebody who just had his 20th birthday yesterday, you know? But I guess that's not my problem. That's something God would have to sort out, or they'd have to sort out with him. But the point is, you know, children were not considered responsible for their actions because they were not mature enough to, you know, to make the right decisions and to do the right thing. But, you know, ultimately, at some point, I mean, we won't be around, and then our children will be on their own. And so we do have to help them to develop their own relationship with God. And that includes teaching them to pray regularly. And really every night, I think, if you look at Matthew chapter 6, for example, in the example of the Lord's Prayer, the example of a prayer that Jesus Christ gave us, in verse 9, we could begin there. He says, "In this manner, therefore, pray, our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread." Give us this day. So prayer was meant to be daily. That's what we learn from verse 11 there. Give us this day our daily bread. And Bible study was also meant to be daily. Remember, the example of the Bereans and the Acts of the Apostles was they searched the Scriptures daily. So that was something that was a habit that they had as well. So, you know, these are two good habits to teach our children, that they should pray. And if we teach them to pray at a regular time every day, then it becomes a habit. And some of those habits will stick with them for the rest of their lives. And if we teach them to read the Bible a little each day, and, you know, and I'm talking about an age-appropriate Bible, I'm not talking about necessarily a big study Bible like this, but a book of Bible stories, if they read something for a few minutes every night before they go to bed, that teaches a habit as well, which is something that they will retain even after they're on their own, or ultimately even after we are gone. Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6 reminds us of our responsibility in verse 6. "These words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. So, you know, we have a responsibility to be teaching our children. And it's not always easy to do that or to find the time to do that. But, you know, ultimately, I mean, let's face it, when we think about life and we think about the fact that ultimately, you know, all of us do die, we're told that in the book of Hebrews, the most important thing in life is religion. You know, I still remember Karen Armstrong, no relation to Herbert Armstrong, but Karen Armstrong is one of the world's recognized greatest experts on fundamentalism. And I remember her being interviewed on television a few years ago, and she said, you know, before September the 11th, most people in the West thought that religion was not really all that important. But since September the 11th, everybody's realized it's still more important than anything else. And there's a lot of truth to that. And I think as we get older, we realize that. It's hard to convey that to children. It's hard to convey that to ABC students, many of whom are probably there because they're hoping to find the right girl or the right guy. But, you know, ultimately, our religious beliefs and our relationship with God is the most important thing of all. And we have to remember that and help our children to understand these things. We need to teach them as well when it comes to religious beliefs, to remember the Sabbath day, Exodus 20, verse 8. And I always think it's interesting that that word remember is used, because it is easy to forget the Sabbath. Children don't know the difference between one day or another. Every day looks to be the same to them. So again, we have to get them into a routine where they know that there's one day a week that is different, the Sabbath day. And it also shows the importance of routine to our children. You know, I look back and I think, you know, there's one thing I will be very thankful to my parents for, and my mother in particular. We had three meals a day, the same time every day, and just three meals, no nibbles or anything. And I think if I could just get back to that, I'd probably be in a lot better state of health. But the way life is today, you know, you just grab a bite to eat when you can. And without realizing it, you're probably eating far more than you should, and it doesn't do you any good. You know, it's bad for you. So, you know, but it emphasizes the importance of routine to children in particular. And, you know, that's the way it was when I was growing up on the food side. And certainly we need to help our children to understand when it comes to spiritual things like the Sabbath, the importance of routine. We also, I think, need to help our children to learn to focus. This is one thing I've seen to be a problem at ABC, and not just ABC, but in other things as well. This is the age of distractions. Students are increasingly distracted by laptops and text messaging. Some defend themselves by saying they have ADD. But what they don't realize is, you know, when I was growing up, ADD did not exist. It was not something that anybody had any understanding of. And I wonder sometimes if we haven't contributed to it greatly by all these distractions, you know, by the electronic gadgets and everything. Because there's so many interruptions constantly. And, you know, I see it with our grandchildren as well, that you know, there's just so many of these things, cell phones and laptops and, you know, TV and music. And, you know, it's very hard to teach children to concentrate, but they need to learn to concentrate. I told the ABC students, I was encouraging them to, you know, not use their laptops for anything other than ABC-related activity. In other words, if they want to take notes while I'm speaking, that's fine. But don't use it for anything else. You know, you're not there to play games. You're not there to send messages to one another, for example. It's an opportunity to learn. And I said that recently, Diane and I were watching, I've forgotten what it was, we were watching something from England, a movie that we'd rented. And, you know, it was so complicated. Diane was on her laptop, and I was using my laptop, keeping up with my mail. It was so complicated, we had to keep rewinding it. You know, I was off the TV, so it was TiVo. I was using TiVo, so I rewound it. And I said, you know, if we ever watch anything from England again, we need to close our laptops. Because, you know, what you get from British television is generally, I mean, obviously you've got Benny Hill and Monty Python, but what you generally get from England is more, is deeper, if you want to put it that way, is more complicated than generally what comes out of Hollywood, which is more mass entertainment. So I said, if we get anything else from England, we close our laptops because we need to help each other understand what's going on. We've both got to stay alert. And no matter what we watch, it could be, no matter what it is, it could be the best movie ever made. I always fall asleep for at least 20 minutes in the middle, so therefore I need Diane to keep up with what's going on. So, you know, but it is the age of distractions. And, you know, this is a problem, I think, with young people. And it's, consequently, a lot of people find it very hard to study, very hard to just sit down and read. I mean, I find it hard just to sit down and write an article. You know, if I've got 2,500 words or whatever, I had one this week, they want 4,500 words. And when I heard it, I just groaned. You know, there's no way I can sit down and write 4,500 words. It's just not possible to do that in one go. But sometimes I wish I could. I think, you know, Handel, who wrote The Messiah, sat down for, I think it was 10 days. He just locked himself away. Was it 10 days? It might have only been a weekend, 3 days. Might have been 3 days. But I remember he locked himself away in his study. He did not have any food, nothing to drink, and he wrote the Hallelujah Chorus in just 3 days. And I think, wow, I wish I could do that. Just lock myself away and, you know, write 4,500 words in 3 days. But frankly, I prefer eating and drinking to writing articles. So it's a little bit more difficult than it was for him. He was strange, I guess. Matthew 6 and verse 33 says, "Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you." So, you know, it helps us to focus, to realize we do need to focus. That's extremely important. And we need to help our children to focus. Reading is very important. When I was driving back on Thursday, when you come back from Cincinnati, you go through so many different areas. You know, sometimes there's nothing on the radio, sometimes there is. And at one point, I got the news on NPR, and then it was the Diane Rehm Show. And she was interviewing Julie Andrews. You remember Julie Andrews? You know, it's been 44 years since The Sound of Music came out. So I thought, you know, wow, she must be 70 anyway. So I listened for a few minutes. In fact, actually, I kept the program on for more than a few minutes. I thought I would listen for a few minutes, but I ended up listening to more of it. And, you know, she was talking about how she lost her voice. There was some problem with her voice. She had surgery, and she's not able to sing anymore. And she's been writing books for children. And she had just written or compiled a collection of poems for children. And some of these poems she read on the radio, and they were really quite amusing. So I want to try and get this book for my grandchildren and read it to them. Now, I got to tell you, I do not like poetry. I never have. But, you know, somehow we all have to broaden our horizons. So I thought I would try and get this and read it to the grandchildren. So I want to try and get this book. But also her daughter was on the program. I can't remember her daughter's name. Her daughter helped put this anthology together with Julie Andrews. And her daughter has written a book. I've forgotten what it's called, but it's basically along the lines of teaching your children to be addicted to reading. I've forgotten the exact title of the book. But it was an interesting program. And she was, she was talking about how, you know, so many studies have shown that when children try to learn through other means, electronic means, for example, whether it be television or whether it be a tape or a CD or the internet or whatever, they do not retain anywhere near as much as they do through reading. That reading uses all the senses, and consequently you're more likely to remember, to understand the concept that is in the book that you wouldn't get from the internet. And I was telling the students the same thing. I mean, I talked to the students about this before I heard the program. If I'd heard the program first, I might have put it differently. But, you know, when it comes to, you know, what's going on in the world, for example, people who just use the internet for their world news source do not have as much understanding as people who get a good newspaper like the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times or a paper like that. And, you know, studies have shown that, and they keep on doing these studies, and, you know, they keep on reaffirming the fact that there's a need to study. And even when it comes to Bible study, people who study on the internet are not taking in as much as they do when they use a Bible. So reading is extremely important. And they were talking on this program about the need to help our children when they're very young to develop a good reading habit. You know, whenever I get back from any trip, the first thing the grandchildren want to do is they want to get up on my lap and have me read them a book. And they bring out various books for me to read, some of which I've read so often that I could read them without the book, if you know what I mean. But I'm sure you've all been through that as parents. But, you know, they always want me to read. And so they're developing that habit and that enjoyment of reading, which I think is very important. So it's good for us to be able to convey that to our children. Remembering what the Apostle Paul said in 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 16, regarding study, all scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be complete, thoroughly equipped for every good work. You know, it emphasizes the importance of reading. 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 15 says, be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Again, emphasizing the need for Bible study. And, you know, we're not just talking about Bible study here, but reading just about anything. It does help children a great deal and helps them to develop interest. You know, once you've taught them to read or once you've helped them get the habit of reading, then they'll read their own things. And, you know, they'll obviously get into different areas of interest or the areas of interest that you've got. That doesn't matter as long as they've developed that habit of reading. And it's a very important habit to teach. And then point number three, you know, we need to help our children to live within their means. That's extremely important, to live within their means. You know, that is an area where I think our generation has particularly failed. In fact, yesterday I get this daily electronic newsletter called The Daily Reckoning, and it's written mostly by Americans. They do have an Australian in there as well, and they have I think a couple of British guys occasionally. And next week they've got an interview with Mark Faber, who's a Swiss economist who's probably, I think, the best or most accurate economist in the world. The Daily Reckoning yesterday, though, had a particularly interesting article. Sometimes it's more interesting than others. And the two Americans who were visiting England spoke their minds from England, but they start out by saying this: okay, we'll say what we've been thinking, that our children are going to spit on our graves. That was an interesting first paragraph there. And then it elaborates on this. It says, first, Americans made a colossal mistake in the 90s and the 2000s. They parted, they spent, they borrowed, running up huge debts in the private sector. Most kids could forget about inheriting anything from their parents. Their parents spent it years ago. The boomer generation also made a mess of the biggest success story in world history, the United States of America. In the 60s and 70s, when boomers matured and began to take over, the U.S. was still on top of the world. It had a positive trade balance, huge savings, massive investments abroad, and the strongest companies in the world. And our generation ruined it all. The financial industry took over, replacing manufacturing. Instead of making things we could sell at a profit, Wall Street sold debt, mostly to us. In government, imperial ambitions pushed aside the restraints and good sense of the old republic. Overseas, military bases were set up in 120 different countries. We now have unwinnable trillion-dollar wars that could go on forever. At home, the sheep look to the government to solve every problem. 35 million Americans, as many people as the entire population of Spain, depend on the federal food stamp program for their daily bread. And it goes on like this. But, you know, the point is made very well that, you know, we built up this economic system based on debt, and now, you know, the bill has come due. I mean, we can't do it anymore. And, you know, we've got to help our children to learn from our mistakes. And hopefully our children will not be bitter to us personally, but certainly as a nation, I think, the younger generation is going to end up getting very angry. In fact, I saw recently that 53% of people in the 16 to 24 age group are out of work. 53%. So, you know, we're going to have a lot of built-up resentment here. You know, we need to learn from that. But certainly we need to teach our children the importance of living within their means, something which really our generation was not very good at. Proverbs 22 and verse 7 says, "The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender." I mean, there are biblical principles that we need to teach, but we need to help our children to understand how to live within their means. You know, I get encouraged, actually, by how many people I hear saying they don't have a credit card and they never want one. Usually, though, those comments come from people who did have one or did have 10 or 20 credit cards and got themselves into a mess, and they've learned the lesson now, and they never want to borrow another thing. They never want to overspend again. It is so easy to put things on a credit card, and you know, then when you get the bill, you almost have a heart attack, you know, because it's a lot higher than you thought. And again, studies have shown that people routinely spend 15 to 20% more when they use a credit card than they do if they stick to cash or a debit card, which is better. But certainly we need to teach our children to live within their means and, you know, to save as well. Because what's putting other countries ahead, like China and India, is the fact that they save. I mean, it's crazy. To me, it's an interesting statistic. You know, the average income in China is $100 a month. And the average person saves 40% of their salary each month. And the average income here is about $3,000 a month. And the average person overspends by about 10%. Now, I realize there's a lot more to it than that. But it's a simple statement. And it's true that the Chinese save 40%. That's how they're able to lend us so much money. They earn $100 a month and save $40 a month. That's staggering. How do they do it? I must talk to more Chinese people and learn how they manage their finances, because obviously, you know, I've got a lot to learn. But, you know, it's important for us to live within our means. Look at 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8. Is something that as parents we should be setting a good example here. The Apostle Paul again says, "If anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." So, you know, we have a responsibility to provide for our families and to set a good example to our children. And to share with them even some of the financial mistakes we've made, and to share with them the problems when we go through those problems, whatever they are, because it's good for our children to realize some of these things. You know, I'm trying to help the grandchildren to understand that every time they want a donut or an ice cream, I can't afford it. So I keep on repeating the same thing. It's too much money, or I don't have any money. And then they see me pull out a credit card, so obviously I'm giving them creating a conflict in their mind. So, you know, how do you teach children these things? That you don't have enough money to get them an ice cream every time you go out, or to get them a donut every time you go out. Not to mention the fact that it's bad for their health as well. There's even a dilemma there. You know, somebody obviously told one of our girls, one of Kurt's girls, that, you know, if they eat, I've forgotten what it was, fries I think it was at McDonald's, if they eat them they'll get fat. Now, I would never say that to a child. Because, you know, that can start them off down the road of eating disorders and all kinds of conflicts. So, you know, I prefer to say, you don't want to eat fries a lot, you don't want to eat donuts a lot, you don't want to eat ice cream a lot, because they're not good for you. To me, that's a better way of putting it than to say they make you fat. Because, you know, there's too many people out there with anorexia and bulimia and all kinds of problems that probably go back to things that were said like that. So we do need to be careful about the way that we put it across. But I tell the girls that they're bad for them, and I tell them that certain foods are good for them. So yesterday, as well as watching the kids for 10 hours and 15 minutes and 47 seconds, I also cooked dinner. And, you know, I served them dinner. I did a roast for them, and they wouldn't eat their vegetables. And I said, but vegetables are good food for you. That's good food. Whereas ice cream and donuts, that's not good food. So you need to eat more vegetables and less of the ice cream and the donuts. Didn't make any difference. They still wouldn't eat the carrots. But anyway, we've got to keep on working on that. So it might take a while. Reinforcement, positive reinforcement. 2 Corinthians chapter 12. You know, the Apostle Paul here, again, teaching this principle of living within our means. He says, now for the third time I'm ready to come to you, and I will not be burdensome to you, for I do not seek yours but you. For the children ought not to lay out for the parents, but the parents for the children. You know, we've actually done the reverse. This is the crazy thing. And I think we're the first generation in history that has done this. We are actually living high at the expense of our children. Even now, I mean, AARP, and, you know, I am a member. I just qualified to be a member. no, I didn't. I qualified a few years ago to be a member. But, you know, AARP is one of the more powerful lobbies. And because they're such a powerful lobby, they often get what they want. And by the way, they're in favor of government health care. So, you know, they're such a powerful lobby, they'll keep on pushing for what they want. But, you know, sometimes I don't agree with what they're trying to do because I think, well, you know, wait a minute. You know, why should we who are older get all these benefits they keep on pushing our way? You know, it's our kids that are going to have to pay for all of this. We're already broke as a nation, so why are we, you know, making the burden even greater for our children? I mean, really, we need to get back to a society where everybody takes care of themselves, except those that obviously cannot because they're physically disabled in some way or have some other problems. But, and I, you know, I believe we all have a responsibility there. But as a society, it's simpler if everybody just takes care of themselves. Point number four. I think this is an important principle as well to help our children with, and that is to teach them to accept and even welcome correction. This is very important, to teach them to welcome correction, because none of us welcomes correction. But notice what Hebrews chapter 12 says. You know, and you know, this is, I think, a very important area, because it can make a big difference even when somebody is working in a company. If he can't take correction, then there's going to be a clash with the boss, as a result of which he'll be out of work. And if that keeps on happening often enough, then, you know, he'll end up working in fast food for the rest of his life. Hebrews 12, verse 5, you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as to sons. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. So here's a reminder that God corrects us. And therefore, we help our children by helping them when they're young to learn the benefit of correction. And to take correction like a man or a boy or a girl. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? You know, it was inconceivable when this was written that a father would not correct his children. Of course, nowadays, a lot of kids don't have fathers for a start, but those that do, often the parents, not just the fathers, the mothers too, may not be willing to correct the children. A lot of people don't. But if you are without chastening, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate and not sons. You may as well not have parents if they don't do the job of correcting. Furthermore, we've had human fathers who corrected us and we paid them respect. Shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For they indeed for a few days chastened us as seemed best to them. but he for our profit, that we may be partakers of his holiness. Now, no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. So, you know, it's difficult when we go through any correction. And we all do, not just, you know, from parents. We go through it from other people, maybe our spouse, maybe other people in our families, people at work. But also we go through it from God. Because if we deviate from God's way, you know, we'll find that we get into trouble, that something goes wrong in our lives. And God helps us to get back on track. And he does that through some form of chastening, of correction. And if we haven't learned to accept that and even welcome that as children, then, you know, we're not going to be able to take it as adults either. So it's important, I think, to help our children to accept and even welcome correction. Point number five, help our children to control their emotions. This, again, I think it's something that's important when you read some of the horrible stories that you get on the news about, you know, the violence and things, the things that young people do. I mean, some of the stories now are absolutely horrendous, but, you know, a lot of it just comes back to the fact that people cannot control their emotions. And in 2 Timothy chapter 3, it says this would be a sign of the end time. And it's largely because a lot of people have no religion. They're not brought up with the fear of God. Previous generations were mostly brought up with the fear of God, even though it certainly wasn't perfect. But now it says, know this, that in the last days perilous time will come. For men will be lovers of themselves, and it goes down and lists all kinds of problems at the end time. But in verse 3, in the middle of the verse, it says, without self-control. Not able to control their emotions. Look at Galatians chapter 5. Galatians chapter 5, in contrast, says in verse 22, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, and continues, and in verse 23 it says, self-control. Against such there is no law. So self-control is an important quality to help our children develop. And you know, so those temper tantrums you know, have to be dealt with. We have to help them to learn how to handle them. It doesn't mean to say that they're not going to cry and they're not going to get upset about some things, but, you know, we do need to take opportunity to calmly help them. You know, if we're yelling and screaming at them, that actually makes things worse, and it teaches them to yell and scream as well. So, you know, that doesn't do anything. So we have to be calm, and it's not always easy to be calm when dealing with children, especially when they're throwing a temper tantrum, but they do need to learn how to control themselves. Another point, point number six, I just have two left, I've got 7 points. Point number six is to give them an interest in the world. I sometimes find it rather challenging. In fact, to be honest, I always find it rather challenging that so many of our young people have very little interest in the world in any way. They're just not interested. They don't see it's relevant to them. But in Matthew 24 and verse 42, it says quite clearly that we should watch. Watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. And, you know, this particular year at ABC, I mean, a great deal is happening right now. In fact, I'm just writing an article for World News and Prophecy, looking at the year ahead and the challenges for America. And, you know, I bring out at the beginning of the article, and I'm assuming here that they will use the article, so, you know, maybe I'll have to change it. But, you know, I bring out at the beginning that when I first came into the church 40 years ago, the three main areas when it came to the focus in articles on prophecy, the three main areas were the decline and fall of the English-speaking countries, the rise of Europe, and also, thirdly, the Middle East, which was a main area of focus. This was 40 years ago. A lot of has happened in that 40 years. And, of course, right now, these are also the main themes. I mean, you know, we as a country are broke. And we're not the only ones that are in trouble. England's in a great deal of trouble as well. So the two countries that have dominated the world for over two centuries are broke. And historically, that is of great significance. And, you know, it means that things just don't look good for the future as far as the U.S. and Britain are concerned. In fact, I think I showed you last time I was here, the front page of the Daily Express in London, their front page was Britain, the End. That was the title. Now, that's because of the European, the developments in Europe, but also the country is broke and struggling financially as well. And it all ties in together. And then secondly, the rise of Europe. And this month, while we were at ABC, you know, the European countries have come together. They announced yesterday or 2 days ago who the first president of Europe is going to be, who the first foreign minister of the whole of Europe is going to be. An article yesterday somebody sent me from an American paper said, hey, guys, it said we've been thinking China's the threat to the United States, but now here is Europe. And the person who wrote this article said, Europe's economy is as big as the U.S. and China combined. And here we are focusing on China as a threat. But Europe is potentially a much bigger threat to the United States. And it's like everybody's starting to wake up. And yet, you know, occasionally I would hear a comment from a student, well, you know, what relevance is this to us? To me, that's pretty relevant. Very relevant, in fact. And, you know, other articles have been pointing out that, you know, we just cannot maintain our defense commitments because we're broke. So you get a lot of these articles out now. So I think it's good to try and help our children to have an interest in some of these areas, you know, from a biblical perspective, realizing that all these things that are prophesied to happen have come true and are coming true and will continue to come true. So therefore, really, they all reinforce what we believe. It's taken 40 years. I've been in the church for 40 years. And, you know, but now I can look back and I can see so many things that we talked about 40 years ago are happening much quicker and in a more dramatic way and sometimes in a different way to what we thought would happen 40 years ago. The trends are basically the same as what we said, but sometimes the specifics, the details, are not quite as we thought they would be 40 years ago. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 11, you know, reminds us that the biblical record of the history of Israel contains things that were of benefit to us. They were written down for our benefit. In verse 11, now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Well, this applies much more to us now, at the end of the age. The Apostle Paul thought it was then, but, you know, we understand he was wrong. But, you know, what was written was an admonition for our examples. They were examples for us to be corrected, to be taught, to think about some of these lessons. I mean, you see, for example, in the history of all the kings of Israel, and it is kind of boring in some ways, and, you know, the names are difficult to remember, but what you read into them is this, that when Israel obeyed God, they were blessed, and when they disobeyed God, they were cursed. And if we learn that as a country, just that one thing, it would make a great big difference in the way that we do things. But, you know, these are things that are important for our children to understand. One of the lectures I'm preparing for the next World News and Prophecy Seminar is based on a book called Picking Up the Reins by Norman Moss. And I read the book while I was at ABC, and it's an excellent book. And it looks at how power passed from Britain, which was the number one country before World War II, to America. And it actually gives the specific hour when the United States realized that it was taking over from Britain. And it was in February of 1947. And I think it was February 21st, actually, if you want the exact day. But don't ask me for the hour. But, you know, it does actually give you the specific hour when the administration in Washington realized that Britain's finished. We're taking over. And it was a shock to everybody. And the United States was totally unprepared for this. Nobody had been expecting this. So, you know, the point of my lecture, and I incorporated some of this into what I was saying at ABC, was that, you know, Bible prophecy shows the same thing is going to happen to America. But I think a lot of people can't grasp that. So, you know, I had one or two, you know, students come up and say, when are we getting away from all this British history? It's boring. But I was simply trying to show that, you know, what happened to Britain is going to happen to us too, to make it relevant to people here. But it's like sometimes I think, you know, when you've grown up in a country, it's hard to imagine that the position it's had in the world is rapidly changing. And it is. There was an article somebody sent me this week, and it was about President Obama's visit to Asia, and it was titled Obama and the Twilight of America. And it was from a Canadian newspaper, actually, and a newspaper that sometimes can be quite liberal. But, you know, Obama and the Twilight of America, showing that basically the tour of Asia was accomplishing one thing. We were giving all these other countries everything because we can't do it now. We haven't got the money anymore. We can't promise Taiwan that we will defend them if they get attacked by China. So we're telling China, do what you want. We're talking to Japan about pulling all American troops out of Japan, a country we occupied after World War II. We're having to back out of everything because we're broke. We're just quite simply broke. And just as if you're broke, it affects you as a family, and you might lose your house, and you might lose your car, and, you know, you might lose your nice TV and everything. Being broke as a country is affecting us as well, and we're seeing this more and more each day. And, you know, there's lessons in history here which, you know, we can share with our children, at least, you know, make them interested in, or help them, encourage them to be interested in what is going on, so that it actually encourages their faith, I think, and builds up their faith to realize these things were prophesied, and this is what's going to happen. Point number 7, the last one, is to teach them basic principles of health and morality. The two very much go together. Health and morality. I must say that one of my biggest concerns as a minister for years has been that we've often failed so much to teach our children basic principles of morality. And, sometimes they remember that they shouldn't eat pork and they shouldn't eat shellfish and, they shouldn't keep Christmas. But they may have multiple partners before they get married. And, you know, they don't think anything wrong with that. They don't think there's anything wrong with living together. Because often the influence of society around them is greater than the teaching that they received from their parents in these particular areas. So we certainly should not be afraid to talk to our children openly, appropriately to their age as they get older. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, and I think there's a way to do it as well. You know, if you keep on saying no, 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 it's just like, you know, if you tell your kids no, you can't have an ice cream, you can't have a donut, it'll make you fat. I mean, that's not the right thing to say. And there's a wrong way as well to talk about, moral issues. But I think the way to convey it is if you want to have a happy marriage, then you have to keep yourself pure until you get married. It's your choice. But if you want to have a happy and successful marriage and you want to stay together with that person for 50 or 60 years, then take care of yourself before you get married. And I'm not just talking about diseases. I'm talking about the damage that is done to the mind for people as well. And often, you know, that's something which people don't even think about today. But look at 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 19. Do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own? For you were bought at a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. So we have a responsibility to protect our bodies, to preserve ourselves, to do the right thing. And, I know in Ghana, I mentioned to you before, that I've often spoken at the Virgins Club in Kumasi. And like I said to the students at ABC, you know, if you started a Virgins Club in Lansing, you'd be laughed out of town, you know. You'd have to call it something else. I mean, there is an organization, I think it's called Love Can Wait, I think is the name of it. And it basically believes the same thing, and that is that people should abstain until they get married. And that's commendable. But in Ghana, it's called the Virgins Club. And, you know, people wear these T-shirts with "I'm proud to be a virgin" written on the T-shirt. And even if people here are trying to wait, I don't think anybody would wear a T-shirt that says "I'm proud to be a virgin" because, you know, people would make fun of them. So, you know, it's difficult. It's difficult to go against the grain and to be different from other people. But the scriptures show the importance of this. In fact, in verse 18, it says, "Flee sexual immorality." In the original King James, it says simply, "Flee fornication." Every sin that a man does is outside the body. But he who commits sexual immorality sins against his own body. So people do themselves harm. And, you know, part of that damage is in the mind, because it's then more difficult to be faithful to one person after marriage. And, you know, everything that we know shows that to be the case. So these are things we have to help our children to understand. To run through them again quickly in case you missed any. Firstly, we need to help our children to develop their own relationship with God. And then secondly, help them to focus. Thirdly, help them to live within their means. Number four, help them to accept and even welcome correction. Number five, help them to control their emotions. Number six, help them to develop an interest in the world. And number seven, teach them basic principles of health and morality. And, you know, working with our children can be a great delight, can often be a great challenge. You know, as I was reminded yesterday, it's not always easy, and it's a constant responsibility. After 10 hours, 15 minutes, and 47 seconds, I really was thankful to be able to hand them back to Mom and Dad, who I'm pleased to say promptly took them upstairs away from me so that I could prepare this sermon.